You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC live here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Craig Burley and Ali Morano. Later on in the show, I'll be reflecting on Morocco being the first African side to book a place in the semi-finals of the World Cup ever, plus a very personal tribute from Herc, Seb and Gab on the untimely passing of Grant Wall. We kick things off, though, with England in action against France. France then booking a place in the semi-final with a 2-1 victory. Tchouaméni with a great finish early on. We'd see France take the lead. England, though, would grow into the game, and it would be a Harry Kane penalty. In 9 minutes into the second half, would see them get the equaliser. Then Giroud making it 2-1. Almost straight from the kickoff, England awarded a penalty. Harry Kane putting it over the bar. England out. France then through to the final four to face Morocco. Julien Laurent is with us, as is Steve McManaman, Craig and Ali here in the studio. Before we get the English and French view, I thought from all the matches we've seen, this was the best match with regards to football of the tournament.
Arguably, yes. Normally, before I've sat and watched England at elite level, late on World Cup 4 years ago, Croatia, semi-final, outplayed, outfought as the game went on. And I kind of think as tournaments have evolved, that's where they've been against the better teams, but not today. Yeah, they'll be licking their wounds. They lost the game and it's all about results. But France, in my opinion, can find themselves pretty fortunate to get that. I thought England, after a not rocky start, but you know, not able to control the French quick passing, particularly on the right side, not the left with Mbappe, the right with Dembele playing around Shaw. Once they got control of that, I felt England dominated the game. They worked Hugo Lloris. They never panicked. They created chances. You know, Upamecano got rolled on two or three occasions. Could have cost them. It didn't. And I thought England, by the result, and maybe one or two of the finishes, and obviously the penalty, I thought England actually put on a really, really good performance, but they're out.
Proper match this, wasn't it?
Two big boys. Two really big boys. Not pretend big boys, but two really big boys in the middle of the ring going at it. Now, one team better at times, the other team better than others, but what you had was two teams getting after each other with high quality, with elite level of execution, with tough decisions for the referee, with quality of execution at times, with the passing and the final touch. There was everything and anything that you want from a game of this magnitude. That looked like a quarterfinal. In fact, we can only hope that the final of this tournament lives up to what England against France was in the quarterfinals.
Right, do I start with France or England? I suppose let's start with France, as they're the winner. Oh, Frank LeBeuf late. Thanks for turning up, Frank. How did you see it?
Well, I have to agree with the guy. I think it was a great game to watch. Even if in both sides it wasn't perfect, I think England are mostly more control of the ball and the game, you know, overall. And France can be, yeah, of course, fortunate to go through. It would have been a different matter if maybe end of the game if Harry Kane would have scored his second pen. But that's what it is. Football is about details. And I know that Hugo Lloris has been very much criticized by the British or English newspapers. I think he gave a right answer that he's still a top-notch goalkeeper and did what they had to do today to save like six times the French goal. So. You know, everything was not perfect, but I enjoyed the game because he went from a side to another side. Any team could have won that game, and he went on the French side. But let's say I'm happy, but I will be very humble with that
wow.
win.
Wow. The word is humble, Macca, in case you didn't pick that up in England. We didn't know that was in Frank's lexicon.
Frank humble. No chance.
Hey, Macca, a weird kind of feeling from an English perspective because they left pretty much everything out there on the pitch, which in other tournaments you can argue they didn't.
I totally agree, mate, and I agree with what Craig said. I thought, you know, 4 years ago against Croatia, we had question marks after the performance. Even when the final and the Euros, I had question marks about the performance. I didn't today. I thought he played really well, particularly in the second half. And as Frank said, in these games, there's just small details. That's all it is that separate one team and the other. I thought it was the best quarterfinal we've seen. I thought these two teams were really standout sides, actually. It was a pity that one had to lose, but I think the English players can go away from this tournament with their heads held high. I thought it was a really good performance, even though they got knocked out in the quarterfinals. They went out to a really good team, and they went out playing really well. And I think, you know, Gareth playing four at the back and put more creative players on, I thought they acquitted themselves really well. So no complaints. Of course, they've gone out and it's upsetting to a certain extent. But the way they played, I thought, you know, they did themselves proud.
Who needs Kareem the Dream, Jules?
You always need Kareem the Dream.
No, I don't
always,
think you do.
Well, I mean, what a game, to be fair, to be watching here. You could feel the tension around the stadium between the fans. I agree with the boys, everything the boys said. I think those games come down to thin margin. This is not the best team that won tonight. England were the better side. I don't think there's any argument about that. There's no debate. But France have that killer instinct. They've got that belief all the time that if you don't pull your chances, we will take one, we will have just one, and we will score it. And Giroud had one just before the goal, where Pickford made a good save, a save that you expect Pickford to make. But then Giroud spoke after the game and said, I was praying God that he give me another chance. And the second chance came straight after on that wonderful ball by Griezmann, who had a masterclass today. I think when you've got a player like that, whatever team you are, if you have a player like Antoine Griezmann in your team, especially now that he plays in that much more deeper role in midfield, and he can control games like that, he can have such an impact on the game, then you have a good chance of winning a game like this.
I think there's no doubt France created in that chance Giroud had before the goal, and I think I felt a little bit sorry in some sense for Maguire, because I actually think it was John Stones, who just wasn't switched on at all. And by the time Maguire got across to the header, it was too late. You know what I mean? Stones never even looked around him when that ball was coming in. But I think France's chances, not them all, but came about through maybe a poor bit of possession from England, where England controlled their build-up and their chances. And, you know, there's no doubt Hugo Lloris, this was a great save, by the way, but there's no doubt Hugo Lloris was the busier of the two goalkeepers. Look, that's why they're world champions, to get the job done. But I thought, in particular Bellingham, I thought Rice was outstanding.
Yeah.
Absolutely outstanding. But I don't blame the referee at all, but he worried me. He looked to me as if he was sort of out his depth a little bit, running around that field, and I got a sense both benches were looking out, including the French one, going, this guy's going to do something stupid in a minute.
Yeah.
You know, to not see, I mean, amongst other things, to not see the challenges on Saka, to not see the push on Mason Mount, to have to go to the monitor and look at it for as long, just sort of worried me. I don't think I can't get my head around the Harry Kane. And I don't know if you've seen anything, Jules, over there, but we haven't seen anything with the first penalty call on Harry Kane. We never saw, and I'm presuming, Jules, it was just outside the box in the first half, but we never got a definitive angle on that. Did you guys see anything over there?
We had a few where we were, to be fair. It looked like on some of the angles, it looked like the contact is outside, just outside the box. There's others where it looked like it's right on the line, and the line is part of the box, and it should have been a pen. It was a call that the English players didn't really understand at all. I have to be honest that the referee didn't even go to see the monitor, which I think means that VAR must have said in his ear, the foul is outside of the box. We can't give a free kick here. VAR can only give a penalty. If it's outside of the box, you can't do anything. So plays on.
I don't have a problem with that. Mm. I don't have an issue with it. If it's outside, it's not a penalty.
Show us the angle.
Yeah. We are the audience. The audience was, I don't know how many millions, billion, whatever it was around the world. The whole thing with VAR is get a decision right and show the audience.
Yeah.
And we didn't see it.
Where did this performance from Antoine Griezmann come from, considering what we've seen him do at club level? Well, he's done nothing at club level, be it Arsenal or Atleti.
And the freedom with which he's playing offensively and appearing in all sorts of different spaces, and not only appearing, but taking those sort of touches away from pressure, and then finding the next pass, and then going and combine, and getting on the ball again, and switching it over to the other side. Always an outlet, always a guy giving this team an option through the midfield, and giving you some work defensively as well. I thought one of my concerns for France coming into this match that the midfield of England would be able to control the pace of the game because they would expose the fact that Antoine Griezmann is also playing in that midfield. And you're going to force him to defend instead of having an impact on the attacking half. And while the midfield of England was really good, I thought that Antoine Griezmann individually was able to give that outlet to France all the time. It wasn't Mbappe all the time. It was more Antoine Griezmann getting on the ball, and then he was finding the next pass. To your question, I have no idea where the performance is coming from, because given what we have seen and the evidence of what we have seen from him at Atletico Madrid, it was a player who was on the wrong side of his career.
Yep.
And then you watch him play with France and you go, oh, well, that's world class. Haven't seen it in a while, but that's world class. That's how good Antoine Griezmann has been.
Give credit to him, any first goal, brilliant.
Really good finish, eh?
Oh, I mean, no back left whatsoever, no run-up. Not great from England, obviously. It came from that sort of, I think it was a Upamecano challenge on Saka, all the way up the field.
You meant the clear foul on Saka.
Well, again, we didn't get many angles of that, but it could have been. It could have been, and certainly from an English point of view, I'm sure I've heard a few crackers in this World Cup, but I heard one of the best ones today on the broadcast. this was that Jude Bellingham's big mistake in closing down Tchouameni was he should have kept his legs closed.
Right, okay.
Now, I haven't seen yet, and 20-odd years of playing and watching, I haven't seen anybody yet able to close the ball down with their legs closed, unless you're going to tie your legs together. I mean, just incredible. It was unfortunate. The ball went through his legs, maybe Pickford sort of a bit late, but it was a bullet of a shot.
Macca, we know that the English media love to cast a villain when they go out of big tournaments. Who's filling that role here?
Nobody, to be honest, mate, because, of course, you can't necessarily blame Harry Kane. He's upset enough because he's missed his second penalty. But, you know, he's equal Wayne Rooney's record. He's now, you know, up there with the leading goal scorer for England. I think they played well. If they didn't play well, I think they would have found some reason to complain. But the fact that they played well, the fact that there was a number of decisions that you can always turn to and say that never went our way, that didn't go our way, which was correct. I thought the referee was poor as well. I think they can look to those factors rather than try and blame a particular player or a particular mistake that happened in the game. You know, it was a good Giroud goal. You know, it was a great cross from Griezmann. England went down the other end, missed a penalty. You know, they had a chance in the last minute where Rashford hit a really nice free kick, but it just didn't dip enough. Sometimes in games like that, it goes your way and other times it doesn't. How many times you say, you know, sometimes the best team doesn't win competitions, but you just need a little bit of luck here and there to get you to where you want to be. And France got that today and they're the world champions. And the fact that they got over the line and got the result, even though at the back sometimes they look really debatable, you know, it shows what a great team they are because they've had their injury problems as well since the start of the tournament. So you have to realise that.
You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't if you're Harry Kane, aren't you? I mean, we saw Messi taking a couple of penalties yesterday with great aplomb. He's bulleted that first one in. I mean, the worst case scenario is, somebody else steps up and misses and Harry's the coward for not taking the second, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The worst scenario for him was not only is he having to wait and it's his second one, it's his Tottenham teammate. Mm. I mean, it's not like it's a goalkeeper. It's not seeing him every day. It makes it even more difficult.
Frank wants an attention. Frank.
Now, because in that matter, I had a chance to interview Hugo Lloris, you know, about those penalties. And I said, what went through your mind? And did you train with Harry Kane, you know, you being in goal and him training to score goals? He said it happens sometimes, you know, and well, you know, you just pray. And it's even more difficult to guess, you know, what's going to happen when you play and you have to receive a penalty against one of the best players in the world that you know perfectly, but you never know what's going to happen. He said, the only thing I can say, he said, even if I'm happy that we won, I feel very sorry for him because he's a great guy, he's a friend of mine, and he was very respectful towards Harry Kane, and that he felt very sad for him. And I had a chance also to interview Didier Deschamps after the game, and I asked him what was the weirdest thing that he saw today, and he said, you know what, I was about to substitute Olivier Giroud before he just scored the goal by Marcus Thuram and also Dembele by Coman. And it's just crazy because they were ready to come on and he scored the goal and say, I left him after. It would have been maybe completely different if I would have substituted Giroud before he scored.
You know who the happiest person after Harry Kane misses a penalty is? Teo Hernandez. You want to explain to me, what in the world is he doing?
Oh, yeah.
The ball is well over not only his head, but obviously Mason Mount's heads as well. There is no chance for Mason Mount to get on this ball. And the fact that you don't even see the ball and you just go and shoulder charge somebody from behind, what do you think was going to happen? It's incredible to me that a defender at this level does that. That he's unable to judge the flight of the ball and see that he's going over his head, over Mount's head, into the arms of Hugo Lloris. No issues, no danger whatsoever, and now you have yourself a penalty.
Frank, I don't think this is one of your interviews, one of your many interviews, it sounds like. But Rabiot said that it was justice that Harry Kane missed the penalty because it should never have been a penalty in the first place.
I cannot agree with that. You know, that's a clear foul. That's a clear penalty. I think if there are doubts on the penalty was not given, you know, in the first half at the beginning of the game, I didn't really see if it was on the line or before the line. But totally agree with the two penalties with the ref. You know, Tchouaméni makes a big foul on the first one. And as Ali said, you know, I don't even understand what Theo Hernandez was trying to do. Because, as he said, he couldn't catch the ball, and he really pushes Mason on his back, and that's a clear foul, nothing to complain about.
for all the good Harry Kane's done, and I'm sure there'll be more, this is going to be the one thing that sort of sticks in his craw.
It's going to be tough to swallow.
And I think what he's trying to do, I might be wrong, I think he's tried to go straight down the middle, and he's... Unless I'm wrong, but I think he's tried to go straight down the middle high and just ballooned it. I mean, I was half thinking he's going to try the Panenka, and I thought, no, he can't be doing that. But I think he's tried to go. He's second guessing the goalkeeper here because he's whizzed it across him for the first one. So now it's a game of bluff, and I think he's going to dive, so I'm going to fire it right down the middle.
Yeah.
You lean back a smidge on that. And that's history.
Macca, it's interesting because a lot of knives were already getting sharpened before the start of this tournament regarding Gareth Southgate's future. But I can't imagine after that performance, despite losing in the quarterfinals, many are calling for him now to be sacked.
No, I think it's the other way around. I think people want him to stay on, to be honest, Dan. I know his contract's another couple of years until after the Euros, but I think we see progression, and this team is exciting, and there's a lot of creativity there, and there's a lot of youth in this England side, and he leads the team really well, doesn't he? You know, there's no stories that come out of the England camp now. Everybody seems to
no
be happy.
No dentist chair, Macca.
No, excuse me?
No dentist chair.
No dentist chair, no, none of that. Or if only, they may have won if they went in the dentist chair, you never know.
Macca, I feel like we've been too positive here for an England side who had the potential to go and win all of this.
Yeah, of course we are, mate. But if you look at the other teams and you looked at Holland last night, the way they played and they went out and the way, you know, Brazil, I think England played the best out of all the teams that have lost. And sometimes you just lose. You know, last year when they won against Denmark in the semi-finals, in the Euros, there was still questions to be asked, but I don't necessarily think there was today. You could look at the game. You saw how well England played. You saw how they lost and why they lost. There was extenuating circumstances why they lost. And sometimes that happens. You know, all the boys who play football matches where you know you were the better team, but somehow, you know, you lose the game by a twist of fate here and there. And sometimes you just have to take it on the chin. Say, you know what, we played well. We made loads of chances. We just couldn't convert. They converted theirs. And there's nothing to get really downhearted about. You know, there was, when they played USA, we sat here and spoke negatively about England's performance. The fact that they got through and the fact that they went out today, I think you can speak positively about it. I think you take every game as it comes. You know England are progressing really well. There's not a lot between them and the world champions. If anything, they were the better team with the better stats. So you can take it at face value. But I think we can be positive, really, with the performance tonight.
I'm not English, right?
No, Ali.
No, not at all.
No.
And yet, I am left feeling a whole lot better about England right now than I was after the final of the Euros.
Yeah.
Correct.
So even though they lose in the quarterfinals, I feel better about this team than I did after missing out on an opportunity to be progressive, to be aggressive in the manner in which they approached the game, and they did not against Italy. They did against France. It just didn't work out.
This is the great Jim Telfer, your rugby man as well.
Yes.
Once said in the British and Irish lines, before the game, he said, defeat doesn't worry me, it's performance. Because we've all suffered defeats,
right,
quite a lot, many of us. But, you know, and I think a lot of people were waiting for Southgate's team to be negative, to be coy, to be timid, to be pedestrian, and they were not. Ultimately, it's a results-driven business, but there was a lot to enjoy about this World Cup, this game, this performance, who they played against. You know, against the USA, they weren't great. England. They were not great.
Yeah.
They were allowed to be bullied at times by an average US side. This is not an average... it's not the best French side in the history of French football, but it's a good French side with a lot of areas that can hurt you. And I thought England were really, really good. And they're, you know, a couple of inches of leaning back penalty away from taking it to extra time, and a great Hugo Lloris performance, apart from the couple of crosses he flapped at.
Yes.
I think some of the saves he made, you'd expect him to make.
Yes, exactly.
He weren't in the corner, they were at him, and he reacted.
The Bellingham reaction was good.
It was good, but it was sort of at him. But, yeah, he flapped a couple of times. But, no, it's hard to criticise England's general performance.
Alexis is with Jules. I'm sorry, Alexis, you've got to be stuck with him after this.
Actually, Dan, I would tell you, we're freezing out here, but I hope you remember that I did pick France to win this one when we were stood out here with NATO. And Jules also was on that show, and he says, I don't know, my heart says France, but my head says England. And Jules, did I not tell you, have a bit more faith. You have the experience at this level, even though Mbappe didn't have the best of nights. Look at your boy Grissy.
Yeah, he was outstanding. We've said that already. I think Kylian didn't do much, you're right, and I think Walker defended very well for most of the time. But the one time when they went in numbers on him for that first goal, a simple 1-2 with Upamecano, then Declan Rice is a little bit too short, and then that unbalances completely the English defence. And after that, the ball goes out wide, comes back, Griezmann, Tchouameni, and Bellingham is that half second too short, because I think of what happened with Kylian when they tried to go at him with three players, and that's all he did. That was enough. I'm happy with that.
And of course, you're happy with France going through. We both of us, we live in London. We know exactly what the vibe is going to be like there. I got to speak to a couple of the fans after. Not many England fans, as you can imagine. Dan wanted to talk to us. This definitely does hurt because they felt they did everything right. But they're still having questions, despite what the boys said, still having questions about Gareth Southgate after this one. Where do you stand on that?
I think it's hard to blame him, really. If Saka wasn't injured, I'm not really sure why Saka came off. And he brought on Sterling, who'd been in London for 5 days. That sub didn't really make much sense for me. But apart from that, they played well. They were a bit nervous at the beginning. We said that. After that, I think it's hard to put the blame on Southgate. However, this killer instinct that we've been talking about, you know, that killer instinct, you need to learn how to get it, because those games are won with that killer instinct.
Well, the lights are turning off on us here at the Albion Stadium. It's almost time for us to go. It's very windy, so back to you, Dad.
What next?
About Mbappe.
The semis.
Yeah, what happened to Mbappe? Was it just that England did a good job on him?
Well, maybe. But this is the question that I would ask Kylian Mbappe. Early on in the second half, the one time that he faced up Kyle Walker and actually tested the speed over distance, which, let me tell you, elite level speed, something that I am not familiar with, and I don't think any of us are familiar with. These guys are running side by side, and Kylian Mbappe is able to turn the corner on Kyle Walker. Why, if you have proven that you can get around that guy, why are you coming short to so many balls? Why are you looking to combine five-yard passes? Why don't you use this asset, who it's a dominant asset, above everybody else in the world, it's a dominant asset that he's able over distance to create separation from the fastest guy England has defending, that you've proven you can turn the corner on him. Why not continue to, at the very least, have those isolation plays and try to exploit that instead of settling for the five-yard passes and coming into the crowd? There was opportunities for him to run away from the crowd, and he was coming towards the crowd. When he was able to stretch his legs, you can see what he is as a player. I just don't quite understand why he wasn't setting himself up for more of those plays and more of those sequences.
What was your biggest concern with the French performance today, Frank?
Well, I guess defensively, what they offered today and the mistakes that they made, At that level, you know, you pay the price every time you make those mistakes. And it happened too many times, but we already talked about it. We knew that the front line was very effective, that Rabiot, Tchouaméni, and Griezmann were doing the job, but we had some question marks about the back, and it's still not resolved. Maybe Hugo Lloris was fortunate to have the ball that he had to save, you know, because they were close to him. But at the end of the day, if he wasn't on a good day, it would have been a drama for France. So I don't know what Didier Deschamps can do from now to Wednesday against Morocco, but he has to talk to his defense because they have to try to make the a better to get a better performance that we saw today, because you know, it was concerning, really, really much concerning today.
Before I let you go, Maka, who do you want to win now? Is it a case of anyone but France?
not particularly. I would like the best team to win. I know that's an easy answer. So, you know, France, Argentina, there's stories around Argentina, of course, with Messi. Morocco's a great story, isn't it? I can't necessarily see them winning the way they keep playing. But I just want the best side to win. And if that is France, so be it, you know, with the best players. It's great to see Mbappe still there. It's great to see Modric still there. Of course, it's great to see Leo Messi still there. And then the story of, you know, Morocco and Hakimi and people like that. So it's been a really enjoyable World Cup. I made the best team win. I'm quite cool with it, actually.
Don't even pretend you're going to watch the rest of the tournament, Maka. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. Good night to you. Just a reminder, extra time available over on our YouTube channel, where Frank is with us later on, along with Ali and Craig, to answer your questions.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid, as we discuss Morocco booking a place in the semi-final. A historic victory for them. No African side in the history of the World Cup have made it to the Final Four. They did so by defeating Portugal by 1-0.
Oh, are you glad we've moved on from that?
Look at these scenes. These are the scenes in Morocco. Unbelievable stuff. And this was afterwards as well, once the final whistle went. These are celebrations that went long into the night.
To be fair, though, those crowds look a bit like the Moroccan defence. Quite hard to get through.
Very much so.
I mean, it's incredible, isn't it?
It's a brilliant story, certainly from the outside. It's not so brilliant from a Portugal perspective. Where did it go wrong for them?
I don't think Portugal were ever going to do to Morocco what they did to Switzerland. They've already shown that Morocco, you know, haven't, it's that old stat again about only lost one goal to an own goal, yep, not to an opposing player. To be in the semi-final of a World Cup with the squad they've got and to have achieved that, it's just incredible. And the injuries, and the 120 minutes plus penalties from the game before.
Yep.
That's an amazing feat. I think from Portugal's point of view, Ronaldo clearly wasn't going to play. I think they morphed back into the Fernando Santos side that we knew.
But why would they do that? With the momentum of what happened?
I just think, again, I'll go back to what I said the other day on the show, was a false dawn for Spain, was a false dawn for Brazil after magnificent performances. And now we've seen a false dawn for Portugal, where it came easy for them to an extent. And maybe they thought it was just a light switch again. We'll go back out, we'll create the chances. They didn't have that zest, that pacey passing, the movement. They just couldn't do it. And maybe this Morocco was super hard to play against, much more difficult than Switzerland. But they just did not replicate everything that was good from the Switzerland game into this game. They could not.
They kind of reverted back to just individuals again.
Yeah, but I would say that in the context of comparison or comparing what Spain was against Morocco, I looked at Portugal, and while I understand that the passing could have been quicker and that the movement could have been quicker and that that sort of spice that we want from their game and that we have seen from their game would show up, I actually thought that they were more effective than Spain was. Spain looked like they were never going to score.
Definitely more effective.
Yeah.
Not effective enough.
Yes.
But more than Spain, yeah.
And Spain never looked like they were ever going to score. Portugal had chances.
No, Ramos had the chance. Yeah. Pepe, obviously, at the end.
Well, they had chances. And even Cristiano Ronaldo had a chance. They said, I have chance, so be it. But it is Cristiano Ronaldo we're talking about. There were opportunities there. Joao Felix had a couple of opportunities himself. So they were trying to find answers. And I think that's where your point is valid and is well taken. The fact that when they got desperate, when it became about problem solving on the field, that it wasn't as easy as it had been against Switzerland, yes, they became individuals, and they became sort of this team that fragmented in the attack. So rather than having those quick combinations, now you're getting desperate. You're just lumping balls in, or you're just trying to squeeze balls in spaces that are not quite there, or you're trying to dribble players that dribble into positions in which now you draw yourself out of spaces. And I just think that Portugal got to the point to where they had no answers, and they were looking around, and that guy didn't have the answer, that guy didn't have the answer, and now, well, Cristiano's going to have the answer. Well, not anymore, he doesn't have the answers. There's a reason as to why he's sitting on the bench, because those answers are not coming as evidently as they once did, and as clearly as they once did. And Portugal just wasn't able to figure out how to break down Morocco, and to that, we have to give credit to Morocco themselves.
I mean, the goalkeeper sold the jerseys, didn't he? I mean, as good a header as it was, he came out half-hearted. He didn't come out.
Yeah.
And I'm nitpicking here. William Carvalho not playing. I'm nitpicking when you win 6-1 and you're changing the team. I know it's nitpicking, but I'm leaving it as it is.
Sure.
Yeah. It was a great performance. I'm leaving it.
Let's welcome in Frank and Gab to the conversation as well. Gab, you were at the game, which I imagine felt like a home game for Morocco.
It did. It's absolutely tremendous. Scenes, people outside, you know, without tickets, kind of just wanting to be part of the atmosphere, even outside the stadium. And obviously, Nasiri's goals sending them on their way. I love to pick holes in Fernando Santos. I mean, Craig laid out all the silly things Fernando Santos did today, but I think I want to give credit to Morocco because, as Craig mentioned, you know, without Mazraoui, without Aguerd at the back, being fatigued, those two guys in midfield, I mean, Amrabat and Ouani, unbelievable. The quality and quantity combined. When they had to defend, they defended. When they had to cue the break, they cued the break. Honestly, I think this is a game that Morocco won, that Morocco deserved to win as much as Portugal lost.
As a collective, it's quite a side, Frank.
It is. It is absolutely fantastic to see. On top of it, they are interchangeable. You know, the captain, Saïss, has to get out. He was already injured but wanted to play. They play with their heart. They play with their faith, but they also play with their head. The coach was a kind of a new coach, and you know, after Ali Lodzic was resigned, he put a tactic in situation, in position where which works perfectly for them, you know, where defensively they're absolutely fantastic. As you, as Craig mentioned, the, it's been a while since they conceded a goal. It's again another clean sheet, and the last goal they conceded was a non-goal. So everything works perfectly. And because En-Nesyri scoring a Ronaldo kind of a header today, you know, you have the icing on the cake. So everything worked perfectly. Of course, you can consider that somehow they can be fortunate, but it's part of football, you know, getting your chance when you need to get the chance and when you need to be fortunate and when you need to perform. And it's part of football. On top of it, if Da Costa makes the mistake on the picture that we see now, you have to talk about Bounou. I mean, that guy, the Moroccan goalkeeper, is absolutely exceptional. And without a goalkeeper like that, you cannot go to semi-final. He's the right goalkeeper. So everything works for Portugal. I have to say I was a little bit disappointed by Portugal. What I saw against Switzerland, it's exactly what we want to see from Portugal. We didn't see it again. And that's sad because they have all the talents for that. But there is a certain way to play. And the first 30 minutes with a tiki-taka kind of boring stuff. I say, what's going on? Why are they going back to that where they showed against Switzerland that they can be more effective playing more vertical? And we didn't find that today.
It's interesting what Bruno and Pepe had to say after the game. They were not happy with the referee's performance, saying that he wanted Argentina to win the World Cup.
Oh, okay.
Hence, he was very much favouring Morocco.
Oh, is that it?
Mm. Well, I didn't quite see that myself.
No, I don't think there were any sort of.
Unless I missed something, it was another. Somebody has to tell Morocco this World Cup's about goals, excitement. But that's not the way they're going to get it done. Clearly, but they're not Greece of the Euros many years ago, who were just stoic and sat in. They've got a real threat on the counter attack with pace and physicality. But no, I didn't see the referee. I mean, that's sour grapes 2.0, isn't it? Because this was about Portugal being...
And I would also say, in regards to Morocco, that today their line of confrontation was higher than it was against Spain. That it was almost as if they said, OK, we're going to defend. We're going to be tied the way that we have been. But we're going to give ourselves a real chance in the counter, in which we don't have to go 80 yards to create a chance. We have to go 50 yards, 40 yards. But when we do that, we're going to commit some numbers going forward. And so I see the fact that Morocco have been defensive, and that's the way that they're going to play. But at the very least, there is a willingness that we're going to be conservative, but if there's a chance for us to go, we're going to go. And they had themselves chances in the counterattack where they could have put this game away from any sort of stress. The other thing that I would say about Morocco, none of this makes sense. None of this makes sense about Morocco. Because when you talk about the preparation for a World Cup, it is not ideal preparation that you change managers with 3 months to go. Because if indeed you're going to be conservative, if indeed you're going to be about being organized defensively, well, you need to work together to do this. Doesn't make sense that they're able to do what they are doing so far. It doesn't make sense as to how Amrabat all of a sudden is a world-class player. This is a mid-table sort of guy, all right, that is playing like a great elite player. Oh. Where is this coming from? I have no idea, but Amrabat has been outstanding.
I think Gab was booing you then.
I would like the referee to go in, or Pepe to go in and see the referee, tell him how bad he was and say, well, listen, you can talk about... missing out in semi-finals and World Cup finals, but I didn't miss a header at the back post from 6 yards.
Right
at the death. All he had to do was get it on target, and he couldn't.
Gab, you're making noises.
Oh, no, just I'm a big Amrabat guy, and obviously Ali doesn't watch a lot of Fiorentina, which admittedly are mid-table in Serie A.
Exactly,
so that does
exactly.
Support,
I said mid-table kind of team, right? I said mid-table kind of team, right? Mid-table kind of player. He's in a mid-table kind of team. Okay, all right.
Gab, did you think the officiating was suspect?
Batistuta's club. I don't even want to call them mid-table. No, look, it's funny because, as you may have heard, Jules and I sat down with Pierluigi Collina before the World Cup, and his job is to pick referees for games. And in the past, it used to be very, very simple. Like, okay, you could officiate in the round of 16, and then if you were from a country that's in the quarterfinals or forward, you wouldn't officiate anymore. And what they've done now is they said, this is silly. We should be grown up enough. You know, Argentina are in the other half of the draw. If there's an Argentine referee that we think is very good, we feel comfortable using him. Why shouldn't we? We want to get the best referees there. So they knew this was coming. You know, Fernando Santos acting all surprised. Why is there an Argentine ref here? Well, you know what? Should have listened to the Gavin Jewell show interview with Colina. He would have told you.
Yeah.
By the way, it happened in the last World Cup, too.
Yeah.
It's absolute nonsense. If you want to make sure, you know what? If you want to make sure that Argentina win it, then what you do is you knock out France in the last round, you knock out Brazil in the last round, you knock out England. You know, you get all surgical about it. You don't go and, with all due respect, knock out Portugal. And we haven't even addressed Cristiano yet, have
well,
we?
Well, let's address him, Gab. Is this the last time we'll see him on a big stage?
I don't think so. I think he wants to give more. I think he has more to give.
What does he have more to give, Gab?
I was really surprised. Well, he's had an absolutely rotten 6 months, but you know, in the season that ended not in 2012, but in June of 2022, he finishes the third top scorer in the Premier League. There's a lot of center forwards in the Premier League, which is the best league in the world, who score fewer goals than Cristiano. So
Ten Hag's got it wrong.
I think he can still go and help somebody. No, he may not be Manchester United. He may not be right for Manchester United, but I still think, you know, I don't think he's happy leaving like that. I was struck by the fact, and I wrote a column about this, that when he came on, you know, towards the end, as all the Portuguese players are freaking out and remonstrating, and then Bruno Fernandes pulling at his shirt and gnashing his teeth and whatever, Cristiano was actually super calm. It was almost as if he felt that, you know, I'm going to nick this winner now, and I'm going to stay calm, and I'm going to lead us. And obviously, he only had really that one half chance. So it didn't work out for him. But obviously, something's broken with Fernando Santos. I think one or the other, most likely Fernando Santos, won't be back. He doesn't look to me like somebody who's ready to throw in the towel, put it that way. And I think also a lot of people, including in Portugal, who thought like, oh, look, you know, Gonzalo Ramos is the answer to all our prayers, are now probably second-guessing themselves a little bit.
I don't think he'd be super calm if he sees the little man left in the World Cup.
Mm.
I think there'd be a couple of fridges been kicked somewhere or whatever.
Why is he kicking a fridge?
Well, kick anything. Don't be around him. If he sees
oh, you missed a fridge.
Oh, it's, that fridge doesn't move. I think you meant Portugal. I think you were talking about Portugal, were you?
I think you could talk about domestic or international.
Well, what he does domestically, I don't know. Whether it's some place where we don't pay much attention to, but there's lots of money, or whether it's, I don't know, no idea. I think from a Portugal perspective, you know, the next World Cup will be, what, 41 and 42, we have the Euros. But a bit like Manchester United, in my opinion, it's time for Portugal to move forward. They've seen the best of them, they've had the best of them, it's not going to get any better. He's not going to reach those heights again. Yeah, I'm not saying he can't come in and do a job, but he'll bring in the eyes of the media. He'll bring in the attention. And there's a new manager, and that's what they'll have. Is that what he wants? They have enough within the squad to go again without Cristiano Ronaldo. They have enough to rebuild and rejig and bring some freshness about it. And whether he's got it in him to say that and go, look, I've had my time. We couldn't get over the line. I'm stepping back. For me, that would be the best thing for all parties.
Here's the thing. Cristiano Ronaldo is not built or made to be just another guy. And so if he were to hang around the national team picture, it would be to have a role much different than what he has had in the past, in which he's coming off the bench to provide you with perhaps a final touch to score a goal if you need it. But that's it. Limited to that. He's not built to be that guy. I don't think in his soul,
yeah,
this is something that he would feel comfortable doing and just being a cheerleader in the background. Part of what has made him successful is he wants to be at the forefront, in the foreground. Yes, give me the ball, I'll resolve the issue. He's no longer in that position and won't be for Portugal any longer.
And if I'm a new manager pitching up, sorry, I want to be seen to be someone that can make that big decision early. And if you don't make that big decision and he does come back, every time you turn up for a friendly or a Nations League or a qualifier. The question is not about your squad. The first question is he playing? Is he happy? And I think that job and this job is tough enough, international management, without having to deal with all that. When you know that player can't deliver you on the field, I would imagine what he's delivered over the last, 15 years. So I think it's time to move on.
What do you think, Frank?
Well, I think we'll have a very near answer, very soon, at least, with the decision that he's going to make to choose the team that he's going to play for. If he plays for a top league, we can expect to see him again with the national team. If he plays for, let's say, more exotic clubs, or club, I don't think we can, or Portugal can count on him saving the national team. So we're going to know very soon. But I'm with the guys. I really think that he wants to stay. He wants to come back. And he wants to play and start the games that he wants to play. He doesn't want to be in the bench. So it's going to be something that he has to decide with a new coach, if there is a new one. But the Ronaldo problem is not over, because what's going to happen is mostly depending on him.
Thank you very much, Frank. We'll say thank you to Gab for the moment. Much appreciated. Of course, as mentioned, you can check out the Gab and Jules podcast throughout the tournament over on the website. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Let's focus now then on who's going to win the whole thing. Frank, France got to be favourites, haven't they?
I'm not sure about that. I think it's first, we all know that the game against Morocco, it's more than a simple game, more than a simple semi-final. And according to what we saw from Morocco, it's going to be everything but easy for the national team. And then on the other side, you have two big teams with two fantastic players, with Modric on one side and Messi on the other side, who want to win a World Cup. So it could come from everybody. I think Croatia wants a revenge against France, that's for sure. And they showed last game that they were absolutely fantastic, compact, strong enough. When you beat the favorite of the World Cup, you have to be the contender, you have to be the main one. So I don't know who's going to win it. But I enjoyed that World Cup because it's indecisive, full of suspense, and really enjoyable.
It's funny, isn't it? If you looked at the semi-finals before and I told you it was going to be Argentina, Croatia, Morocco against France, you'd be like, well, Argentina, Croatia, they're going to push it. Argentina will go through. Morocco, France. But it's not been that sort of World Cup.
It hasn't. And whether the French have better luck than Spain and Portugal try to break this Morocco team down, I don't think they're going to be frightened of Kylian Mbappe. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're talking about him, but I don't think they're fearing any of them. Look, I think France got away with today to an extent because England dominated the midfield, right? We talked about that. They're really good in midfield. The only team in there I think that can match them in the middle of the park is Croatia. I think Argentina have the strengths, but I don't think they're the strongest central midfield. And that is really the hub of what Croatia do. Brozovic, Modric, Kovacic. So in that sense, if France get past Morocco, I think they would be hoping for Argentina, albeit with Messi,
right,
to beat Croatia, because I think France can get at Argentina.
May not be the easiest game on the eye, a Morocco-Croatia final.
Somebody's going to want to have the ball.
Elitist now, but yeah.
Somebody's going to want to have the ball, and obviously it would be Croatia. To that point, what about if France just sit back and wait for Morocco? Is that something that could potentially happen? And say, okay, Morocco, come on and attack us.
This is going to be the ball in the
yes.
middle.
No, you get the ball. No, you get the ball. It's the only way that you're going to have Morocco actually push forward is that you give them the ball.
It's going to be like Stevie with vegetables.
Yeah, nobody's going to touch it, yes. I'm taking Argentina. Because obviously, according to Pepe, there's a conspiracy here.
Yes, yeah.
And so if FIFA wants Argentina to win the World Cup, Argentina's going to win the World Cup.
Of course.
More so than the controversy.
Dan.
I just think that Argentina is trending in the correct direction.
The voice from Paris is here.
Here we go.
Yes. Your father is talking to you, my dear Dan. And
right,
because
yes,
you lost today,
enough.
You have to listen to me. there is one thing important for France against Morocco, because we're all talking about Kylian Mbappe. He's going to play against his friends, his best friend in Paris Saint-Germain, Hakimi. They're all calling each other. I mean, that's going to be a very tricky confrontation, because Hakimi is an exceptional player. He's a very good player. He knows how to handle players like that. He's fast as well. It's going to be very interesting to see how Kylian Mbappe behave in front of players like Hakimi and the other way around. So it's not going to be easy. And, you know, I have a little thing that I think that Croatia is for me the favourite.
Well, they're playing the music in front of you, Frank. We've, of course, got a lot more time to look ahead to those big games. Be sure to join us tomorrow as we start our countdown to those two semi-finals. Meanwhile, the world of soccer was rocked by the news that Grant Wall passed away yesterday whilst watching the Argentina game. A lot of reaction, as you would expect, across the globe on social media. Bob Lee tweeting out, generous of spirit, a peerless journalist. Grant Wall did more to inform and explain and celebrate the beautiful game than any other American ever. Full stop. His loss is incalculable to our profession. Prayers for his family. Jeff Carlisle, of course, writer on ESPN, saying, devastated to hear the news of Grant Wall's passing. Just returned from Qatar a few hours ago, and I'm catching up to this. A fine journalist and human being who worked tirelessly to support the sport of soccer, as well as the work of other journalists who covered the game. Ian Dark tweeting, have just woken in Doha to hear the shocking news that Grant Wall has passed. The game in America was lucky to be served by such a brilliant journalist, and in my time covering the US men's and women's teams, a kind and helpful companion. I can't quite believe this. RIP Grant. On behalf of myself and the national team, tweets Tyler Adams, we offer our deepest sympathy to Grant's wife, Celine Gounder, and all those who mourn the loss of Grant Wall. As players, we have a tremendous amount of respect for the work of journalists, and Grant was a giant voice in soccer that has tragically fallen silent. Really nice tribute here. This is where Grant Wall was supposed to be watching the game today. A wreath of flowers laid, and on the big screen, Grant Wall paid tribute to ahead of the England clash against France. Well, Seb Herkengab knew him well. This is what they had to say about his untimely passing.
Thank you very much, Dan. As we saw there on social media, an outpouring of support in light of Grant Wall's tragic passing. Of the three of us, I think you've known Grant the longest. What first comes to mind?
Well, I mean, I met Grant way, way back before the 98 World Cup in France. And, you know, you get this sort of lanky, already balding even back then, kind of disarming Midwestern charm type of guy who is super bright, but also super curious, and he wants to know. And he's kind of like, you know, sort of a gentleman in France, in Europe. And what struck me for so long back then was at the beginning when he started out, he was covering college basketball for Sports Illustrated as well as soccer. But soccer was his big passion. You know, there he is. He's writing a cover story about a 16-year-old LeBron James. But then he gets super excited because, oh, the magazine might send me to cover, you know, United States against Honduras or whatever. That really was his passion, and he devoted his life to it.
It's funny. He used the same word you did when we talked about it on Football America's disarming.
Yeah. He really was. And I like how you said he was curious. My first interactions with Grant were when I was coming up as a footballer in Los Angeles around 2005. And I think around the time I left Los Angeles and I went to Colorado, he just come out with the Beckham experiment, you know, that book on David Beckham. And I still remember all the footballers involved. You don't get close to footballers. You don't get close to people like Bob Bradley, who he was had a very good relationship with, Jesse Marsh, unless you're disarming. Mm. Footballers by nature aren't very trustworthy. They don't trust just
trusting.
Yeah. Trusting, thank you. They don't just trust anybody. He had that about him. And you know, there are little just things that I remember, how uniquely Grant he was. I was just talking to Seb. Just popped up in my mind. Most people have like a pin collection. They collect jerseys.
Scarves.
Yeah. Ticket stubs, you know, when it comes to like soccer, football. Grandma collected soccer shorts.
Yes, he did.
Just so random, but so uniquely Grant.
You talk about uniquely Grant. I mean, what I think about it, and, you know, he tells stories. You know, Grant was an Eagle Scout. And
I didn't know that, but not a surprise at all.
No, yeah,
not a surprise at all. And he's explaining to my kids who are, you know, at that age when like Boy Scouts are not particularly cool. and his face still lights up when he talks about it. He talks about, you know, what it did for him. Or an even more extreme Grant example, but still very, very Grant. Grant has these two toy poodles, Coco and Zizou. Mm. And I didn't know this because they're getting older. As dogs, or toy poodles get older, they can suffer teeth decay. And guess who brushes their teeth every night? There's a special dog toothbrush. Hmm. And he tells you this in just the most disarming, endearing way. Yeah. And you just say, and you listen, and you say, wow.
Can you put into context for people, because a lot of the people that see this may be international viewers, just how important he was to the American soccer media landscape, because you know the American soccer media landscape, but I think you have a different perspective on it than us. Yeah. You kind of see it from the outside.
Look, I think it's tough to make your living as a football writer. As a football writer in the United States, all the more so. There are more today. But I remember when he became a full-time football writer, when SI said, okay, you don't need to do college basketball anymore. I believe at that time there were only two who were actually in the U.S., and Grant was one of them, who were making a living doing this. So he kind of had that whole continuum. He had that, you mentioned, that tremendous relationship with Bob Bradley. Bob Bradley, another Princeton guy, like Grant and like Jesse Marsh. They were all contemporaries there. But, you know, he was able to do it because he could always bring a fresh angle to the story. Mm. You know, you could cover a story from, like, the hardcore sort of futbolistas, start talking about tactics and technique and so on. But he could also say, hey, you know, sports fan at large, this is what makes a story relevant or interesting to you. And he always approached it with his curiosity, with his wonder. You know, he loved to travel. He loved to tell stories. And that would, and he was obviously a very, very gifted writer as well. And that's what made the package work.
He really was, and it's an easy phrase to say, but I don't think one to achieve, like, the preeminent American soccer journalist, right? From a player's perspective, did you guys feel that way when you got a Grant Wall interview, when he was tweeting about you?
Think about the names in the room. He was the name in the room.
Yeah.
He was it. I mean, you live abroad. We have a certain appreciation for the game and how it's consumed abroad. I go back into my upbringing. There are certain sports figures when it comes to media broadcasting, whether in print or in television, and you know who they are. Even today, when you speak to our colleagues, our international colleagues, they know Grant Wall. And to think about how much he's accomplished, but how young he was, 48 years old, that to me is what's crazy part about it, and you go back to how disarming he was, Grant spoke Spanish. Grant lived in Argentina. He did interviews and he did TV work and, you know, some writing in Spanish, and you would never think of these things. No. You got to meet some of the game's central figures and got those people to buy into what he was selling. It really is amazing.
And he was there. He was ever present, right? I mean, he was recognized here at the World Cup recently for the fact that he covered 8 World Cups, every World Cup since 1994. He covered the first one for the Miami Herald, of course, subsequent ones for Sports Illustrated and whatnot. You know, you don't get to do that. You develop a network of people, not just other colleagues and not just footballers, but coaches, league officials, and so on. And he knew how to do that side of it as well. You know, it was so multifaceted. He's not just the guy who wrote stories, the guy who did interviews. He's the guy who knew how to network, the guy who knew how to find the right angle. All those skills in one person.
Yeah. Gab, thanks for the memories, the perspective at what I know must be a difficult time. You know, Grant, for a long, long time. We have much more on Grant Wall and his legacy on the latest edition of Football Americas, which is, of course, available now on ESPN+. Dan, we send it back to you.
Well, reaction not limited to the soccer world. As Gab mentioned, he wrote The Chosen One for Sports Illustrated, which introduced LeBron James to the mainstream sports fan. This was his reaction to the passing of Grant Wall.
I'm very fond of Grant, and you know, having that that cover shoot, you know, me being a teenager and him covering that, it was a pretty cool thing. And he was always pretty cool to be around. He spent a lot of time in my hometown of Akron, covering me over the course of time before that shoot came out, and or before that cover story came out. And I've always kind of watched from a distance, you know, even when I, you know, moved up in the ranks and became a professional, and you know, he kind of went to a different sport and things of that nature over the years. Anytime his name will come up, I'll always think back to me as a teenager and having Grant, you know, in our building down at St. V. So it's a tragic loss. It's a unfortunate, you know, to lose someone as great as he was. You know, and I wish his family, like I said, the best, and you know, may he rest in paradise.
The ESPN FC family, of course, pass on their condolences to Grant Wall's family, Grant, who passed away at the age of 48.
The war in Ukraine has begun.
Your fellow countrymen see you and your team take the field. What do you think they see?
What a wonderful night for the people of Ukraine against all the odds. This team will come together to keep their World Cup dream alive.
Gorgeous.
So be sure to check that out. That's available tomorrow on ESPN, 5:30 Eastern. You can stream it also on ESPN+. Meanwhile, in Iran, women are banned from soccer stadiums, but some women dare to defy that to back their joy of the game. Be sure to check out the latest edition of the 30 for 30 podcast, Pink Card. Well, ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. Away from the World Cup, the big story today coming out of Germany is that Manuel Neuer has broken his leg. It'll leave him out for the rest of the season, and has not been, of course, a good few weeks for Bayern. Lucas Hernandez, of course, doing his ACL. Sadio Mane getting injured ahead of the start of the World Cup. They've got PSG in a round of the Champions League, which will be the first of the knockout stages. Strange to be talking about domestic football considering everything else that is going on at the moment. This was the picture of Manuel Neuer with a very broken leg, Frank.
I gave it away.
Yeah, indeed. This happened while he was doing some sort of skiing, which is approved by the club.
Yeah, that's approved by the club, but I remember skiing and knowing that It was forbidden for me to ski, so I guess it was kind of a ski where, you know, you're being dropped by helicopters and then you go downhill. But it's even more dangerous than on the normal slope. And really, I'm amazed that it did that kind of thing, because they are dangerous. I've been skiing since the age of 8 years old, and I know how dangerous it can be. I was hiding. I always said that I knew that it was forbidden, but the only forbid stuff was to get injured, to break his leg. It happened to him. Well, I wish him the best, and I think it's very sad for Bayern Munich. But I have to say, like I did, it's unprofessional for me.
Just to confirm, it wasn't kind of James Bond jumping out of a helicopter. It was something supposedly safer than that.
But well, clearly not. Skiing.
But still a risk.
Well, skiing, riding a motorbike, banned. Well, it might have changed now. Skydiving, just in case the parachute doesn't open.
Right.
Bit of a problem.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, but yeah. I tell you what, I'll still have $100 on Bayern winning the league.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm not worried.
I suppose so.
Yeah. But all right, 50.
Their priority, obviously, is the Champions League. And
well, but here's the thing. Lucas Hernandez does his ACL. These things happen, right?
Yes.
It happens on the field. You're frustrated, of course. You don't want it to happen, but you are able to accept it and try to, at the very least, get back on the field as soon as possible. In the case of Manuel Neuer, by skiing, you're calling upon this. This wasn't a risk that you needed to take. And so while I have some sympathy for Manuel Neuer, because nobody wants anybody to break their leg, you almost want to say, what are you doing, man? What are you doing going skiing? You're still a professional player, and while it may be allowed and while you may be taking all the precautions, you are now bringing into the equation something that wasn't there before. And now you got yourself a broken leg.
The transfer window, of course, will open at the start of January to keep up to date with all the latest.
I hope the World Cup doesn't finish.
The transfer news, be sure to go over to the website.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here is the reaction then in England to them being eliminated. French fried, Lionheart's broken. It's the end of the world.
Okay.
Wow. Qatar heroes. Au revoir, Qatar. Alexis called out with some fans after the game.
Again, Southgate's making some substitutions too late. He should have. He did that against Italy. He did that against Croatia. And so I think he's good, but he needs to be a bit more brave when we needed to be brave.
What went wrong is England were playing on the back foot. If you're on the back foot, you are more likely to fall behind.
We didn't deserve to lose. Penalties, they're always hit and miss.
And England did peg it back, but it just wasn't enough. And that happens in knockout football. You get one chance and it's very cruel.
Yes or no, quick answer. Sticking with Southgate?
No, get rid of him.
No. He should have played more attacking players, more on the front foot, punch for punch. Shame that we went out this way.
I think this team under Southgate still can do a lot at the next Euros. It's only less than 2 years away. And I think England can do it. Come on, Euros 2024. Come on.
There you go, good.
One
same research level as me.
There was one chap that didn't want Southgate to play in the centre-half.
No, that's it. Just attack all the time. That is it. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stay tuned. Extra time is next. Frank with us, obviously the boys in the studio as well, to answer your questions. Yeah. ESPN FC Extra Time is brought to you by Globant. Hello and welcome into the studio. Craig and Ali with us. And Frank Leboeuf obviously had to be here on a day like today as France beat England to book a place in the semi-finals. A lot of questions this sort of tone. Dan, how's your spirit? You have to be proud of England and the way they presented themselves during this tournament.
Paint the picture.
I didn't sit down for 90 minutes.
So you're in your house.
Yes, it's just me.
Where were the boys?
They were upstairs. They don't care. No interest. Okay. No interest.
English jersey on?
An England jersey was on.
That's your big mistake. Punter.
And
much
just
punter.
A lot of pacing. Right. There's just a lot of bad, unnecessary language.
Yeah, I can't condone
that. You know what? I would love to be a fly, you know, since yesterday, you know, after your wife losing with Brazil and you losing with England.
Yes, I mean, it's not a good 24 hours.
And a Brazilian referee. Don't forget that, Frank.
I can just imagine the pacing around the lounge on your own, TV's on, nervous energy. I'm presuming as the game went on, was whenever the dog walked by, you get out of here!
Poppy was coming in and out of the house.
My three were doing that. And I've got
she was
three.
Scared,
Two of mine decided they were going to have a carry-on in front of the TV.
Yeah.
When it was getting exciting, I'm like, freaking dogs!
Carry on is a fight.
What do you mean?
Just in case.
Carry on, a carry on is a Scottish-British, all right. Play acting, fighting.
I didn't know it was going to say that term. Frank, you watched it because you were doing French TV as well, yeah? And then you interviewed everyone afterwards.
Money, Frank, money.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I have to watch this afternoon and work after the Moroccan games. Oh. And then I work again for the French England, and I'm here in front of you.
Wow.
It's a big pleasure. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. No time what to party. What English representation did you have on the panel?
Oh, none. We don't talk to English people.
Disgusting.
In French, you know, we don't like you.
Disgusting. Craig, do you think Portugal underestimated Morocco a bit, like the panel did yesterday, even though Morocco has the best defence in the competition? Of course, everyone in the panel went for Portugal to go through.
Yeah. Mm. Including Craig, by the way.
No, I went for Morocco. I think everybody felt that Morocco they'd used all the gas up.
Right.
I don't think they underestimated them. I just think they couldn't replicate the match before.
We've got a good couple of panellists here for this next question. How difficult is it to take two penalty kicks in one match? Because Craig famously took three in a Premier League match, scored your first two, could have been the first person ever to get a hat-trick of Premier League penalties.
Well, in England, in the Premier League.
Yes, that's why I said Premier League penalties.
Right,
yep.
Missed that bit at the end.
Well, yep.
The answer is, and it wasn't clearly not the pressure of a World Cup, but it was pressure. It wasn't a nothing match. It was at Derby that year we were fighting relegation.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a pressure. Not that much. And it is difficult because you're second guessing. And I remember when the third one came around. I mean, I was already in the second one, where do you go? Do you go same side? I went same side. I did what Ken did. We whipped it across the goalie.
Yep.
I did the same again. Keeper went the right way. Almost got there. So now I've got the third one in the second half. And I'm like, right. I'll go the same way because he'll think I'm going there. No.
Oh, no.
I told you that Alan Wilkie, the referee, blew the whistle.
Right.
And I went, oh, I'll have a cup of tea.
Wait a moment.
I don't know where I'm putting it.
Right.
I didn't know where I was putting it.
So then where did you put it and why?
I tried to go down the middle.
Right.
Which is what I think Kane tried. I might be wrong. I tried to go down the middle with a mid-height.
Yes.
The keeper went the same way as I'd went the first time.
Yep.
And I kind of pulled it a little bit.
To get a leg on it.
He got a leg on it. He got his left leg on it over the bar.
Oh.
But you do, it's natural.
I bet. Frank, you've taken more than one penalty in a game as well, haven't you?
Yes, it happened once and I scored two and I had the third one. I didn't want to score the third one. But I agree with Craig. You know, the second one, you say, okay, I put that there. The first one I put it on the floor, you know, on the right side of the goalkeeper. So what do I do? Do I change? Will he think? You know, we're not very much too smart people. So when you start wondering, you know, it's becoming a big mess up there. So I guess you just switch off and you say, okay, I shoot there and we'll see what's going to happen. But, it worked for me. It only happened once in my career. But Yeah, it's kind of a difficult situation. And I think it should be avoided by asking one of your teammates to shoot the second one.
We spoke about it yesterday with Messi, and the technique that he chose to utilize.
He did the slow
and staring down the goalkeeper. That's even more nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
It's not like he's picking a side. What if the guy doesn't move?
Yeah.
And so it's about who's going to hold their nerve. At some point, Messi's going to have to approach the ball and hit it. But the goalkeeper feels like, I cannot wait. I got to dive. If I don't dive, I'm not going to get there. And Messi won out.
We had a couple of lads that would have taken it, actually, but they were younger lads.
Okay.
Seth Johnson and Rory Delap.
Right.
The more senior players that were on the field that day.
Yeah, they didn't want anything to do with it.
They wouldn't have taken it. Seth Johnson would have taken it with his great, lovely left foot, or Rory, because he's daft.
Yes.
They were like...
what a compliment that is.
Well, Rory, daft lad from Carlisle.
That's right.
He's a lovely lad, but he's... Rory, great striker, but he would have... But I didn't want to put them in the position, and I didn't have the stomach to try the Panenka.
Right.
Because it might not even have got to the six-yard box. And Jim Smith would have stubbed his cigar out in my eye.
Oh, nice.
Had I tried that.
Lovely.
Jim. Yeah. So I didn't have the.
Rory Delap, of course, well known for the long throws at Stoke, and of course Danny Higginbotham was telling us that one day in training he just launched it, and they're like, "Why have you never told us about that?" And he's like, "Well, no one ever asked."
Rory, why didn't you tell us about a long throw? You never asked me, Gaffer. We could have been 12 points off the relegation. We could have been on the beach.
Oh man, Frank.
Hope he sees us.
If you were the coach or teammate of Theo Hernandez, what do you say to him in the locker room? There was a lot of swearing in the Thomas household versus here in the replay then. Because what was the referee taking so much time about? And the VAR monitor. Anyway, Frank, Theo Hernandez.
Well, considering that your friends won, you know, I would say to him, hey, guy, never ever again, you know, please. What happened to you? When did you lose your mind, you know, doing that? But in a nice way, because we won. I think it's more difficult when you lose the game,
right,
and you have that kind of player who make that mistakes, and that you don't know how to have to behave, because you can go maybe to a fight, you know, with a guy if you make a hard comment, because the guy, I think, is already, you know, very sad and upset a bit with himself. So it's hard to psychologically. You have to work according to the situation, I think.
Just in case Rory ever sees this, I don't think so. Let me reverse that.
Okay.
Rory wouldn't have taken the penalty. I just remembered.
Oh.
He got sent off after 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he was.
It's a real tribute to Rory Delap.
Good job, Rory.
He was off. A harsh sending off, I have to say.
Right.
But he was off-ski.
Oh, okay.
So he wouldn't. Anyway.
Frank, what kind of chance does Morocco have against France? Their defence has been exceptional, but they've picked up several injuries, and I'm presuming they don't have the same depth as France.
Well, you know, everybody thought that today will be also the kind of game where, you know, they had some players injured and the tiniest will come over, you know, after maybe an hour, and this way Portugal will easily win, but they show the spirit that they needed to beat Portugal. So now seeing that, you know, seeing how much they work defensively, how strong they are, you know, to go with the coach tactics. I would say it's almost a 50-50. We are in a semi-final of a World Cup. To say that it's going to be easy for France would be not knowing football and not respecting football. So Didier Deschamps already talked about it. There is a time to enjoy tonight. We're going to see how it works. But we already know that what the coach did with that Moroccan team in such a short time, it's exceptional. Ziyech, he's playing at his best, you know, where he had two very difficult years with Chelsea. And players are showing their best right now. And it's why, you know, you have to respect them and consider that it's a 50-50, because it's not a simple game. It's a semi-final of a World Cup.
We've got plenty more time, haven't we? Plenty more time to
talk about. He's got that jacket on again with a little red thing on the side.
He's sleeping in those turtlenecks.
I mean, I'm not being funny.
What's he doing?
Frank, at times hard. Just change your jacket.
Do you turtleneck it up on French TV as well?
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
No, today I had they pushed me because of the French national team. I was coming like that. I said, no, you have to wear a shirt with a tie because he's for the national team. I got a little bit upset about that.
He got upset.
It's I dress the way I want. But because I know that Craig and yourself hate me so much when I wear turtleneck that I carry on,
wow.
You know, and I'm gonna keep on keeping it as long as you hate it.
Frank, take us through the conversation between the producer who said you had to wear a shirt and tie and your response to that.
Okay. I said, okay, if you say so, but I don't like it.
I reckon it was a
bit. But he must have had comfortable socks. We know how much.
Oh, yes, he always knew socks from West Farms Mall.
Yes.
Oh, yes, I have my blue socks. Yeah, guys. Yes. You know?
I'm excited about these socks.
Oh, I love those ones.
Oh. Okay. Okay. Ali.
Wrap this up, sorry.
To me, it's simple. Uh-huh. Southgate has been the owner of a Ferrari for many years and big matches, and yet he insists on only driving under 30 miles an hour in a school zone. This England squad need a manager with dynamic ideas, not constant caution. Well, we advise everyone to drive at 30 miles per hour in a school zone.
It's 25, actually.
Yeah. Yep. Let's think it's the Reeper Bahn, which you've been on.
Yes.
Not the Reeper Bahn, that's somewhere in Hamburg. That's a different place.
You mean the Autobahn?
Yes.
I've been there.
The Reaper part, anyway. Uh-huh.
So what is the question then?
I'm completely got my foot in.
I would give some validity to that statement following the Euro final.
Right.
But not after today. Today, England attacked. Today, England got after France. So based on today's evidence, I don't think that's accurate.
I've been to Hamburg.
Have you been to the Reeper Bahn?
No.
I filmed a pilot there for Channel 5 and like a fan's guide to the World Cup in 2006. Mm. So it had like an edge of what fans might like.
What? Okay. What about the Autobahn?
It's not the Reaper Bahn I saw.
Craig, who should England hire next so he won't take Saka off when he's causing all the problems?
Yeah, I don't know if he was... I was a bit surprised about that. Bear in mind they were trying to foul him every time when he came in the box, won the penalty... what was the question?
Who should replace Southgate?
It wasn't that bad, come on.
Right.
I mean, I don't know.
Did it surprise you?
What?
That you have that answer compared to the criticism that you've laid at his door in previous tournaments?
No, I think he's been too defensive.
Right.
And I think he made some bad team selections. With the players that he had, and today I don't think he did. I think he went with what's what and who was playing well, and 5 minutes here or there, changing a substitution. I don't think it was much. I mean, he's the top striker in English football at the moment. Missed a penalty.
Yeah,
that would have taken the game into extra time. France were on the rack for long periods. Just didn't win the game.
This wasn't a situation like, say, Luis Enrique that you're asking questions, or Tite that you're asking questions. Again, after this
just
match...
Football. Just football, isn't it?
Well, that's oversimplistic. But yes, in the end, France is still a very good team. And so you lost to a very good team in what was a very good match.
In the group stage, there were a couple of very weak penalties called in favour of Ronaldo and Messi. But otherwise, the officiating seems solid. It seems like the bad calls or non-calls have mushroomed in the knockout games. What's going on?
Well, the pressure ramps up not only for players, it ramps up for the referees as well.
Right.
But you would assume that having the system that you have in place, the bad calls, if they are game-changing, game-defining calls, would be able to be addressed by VAR. So in that sense, I would assume that VAR actually takes some of that pressure off. Apparently not.
Matteo Lajos just woke up yesterday.
No, he just said that.
As long as he's not doing the final, I don't care who does the final.
Surely they can't give him the
final. Well, I know, but I'll tell you who's happy England all out.
We were talking about this before.
Say England for me, I can't say it.
Yeah, England. England. Are you going to talk about an English referee now?
Yeah, because you heard Ian Dark talking about it?
No, I didn't.
All right, I shall tell you. Ian Dark said he was talking to referees, not Michael Oliver.
Yeah.
And they all said, the English ones, they would be happy.
Well, it's Clattenburg, isn't it, back in the day? He said he was happy when England got knocked out.
All right. I thought Michael Oliver is a good ref. I think better than that one today. Brazil, see?
There you are. Lovely.
Clattenburg won't be happy, though. Because if Michael Oliver then
calls... Yeah, it kind of eclipses him. Yeah.
Did Mark ever do the... Was it a European final he did?
He's done the Champions League final, hasn't he?
Howard Webb did the final in 2004, the Spain-Netherlands game.
Yeah. That was the one I
That was the De Jong one, wasn't
that
it?
That was the one I did. It was a horrible game.
Yeah, yes,
at least when Clattenburg comes on, we can. If Michael Oliver gets to do the final, we can call Matt the Nearly Man when he comes on.
Right.
In fact, he might not even get to do the final for the network he's broadcasting for at the moment.
What would you surprise...
It's a big surprise, bearing in mind who will.
What would surprise you the most, Frank? 2018 finalists meeting again in the final, that is France and Croatia, or Argentina against Morocco final. Both would be interesting.
Yeah, both would be interesting, but you can understand that I would be more interesting about Croatia playing against France.
Right.
And have a kind of a revenge from for Croatia. I think it never happened that two teams meet in two finals 4 years after. So that's kind of odd and special. Yeah, would love to see that. I would love to see Croatia again. Because I really think that, you know, I didn't like the final of the World Cup 4 years ago, where I think the first goal that France scored wasn't really a penalty. It wasn't. That the foul on the free kick that Griezmann scored, I think, on the second goal wasn't a foul.
No.
So I was pretty upset by the fight. Yeah, I was happy for France, but I think it wasn't nice and fair for Croatia. So maybe a revenge would be nice and see France winning in a normal manner.
He has a funny way of showing that he was happy for France.
Yeah, and it was because 98.
Did you see the other side of Messi after the Dutch game?
Yes, I did, in the mixed zone.
And to the Dutch, whether it was Van Gaal, I think it was. Did you see that?
Yes, it was the Van Gaal.
Do we know what Van Gaal said? Not that he's immune to saying stuff.
Messi said that Van Gaal disrespected Argentina.
Oh.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
He got very angry though, didn't he?
He was angry in the mix zone. Yeah. Can we say the word that you use in Spanish?
Yeah.
It's bobo?
What's bobo? Dummy.
Oh, dummy.
Yes.
That's not...
No.
As
insults go.
Yeah. Takes one to know one.
I know.
What's that?
Takes one to know one, an angry man.
What's that? I thought you called me a dummy. I'm all right with that. I'm okay with dummy.
Final question. Dan said that he was going to wear shorts in every restaurant now for the next 4 years, despite Frank. Frank, what would annoy you more? what am I saying here? Do you think you'll do it? Who's more upset? Me with England's loss, or you for his affront to dining culture?
I didn't get the question the last time.
Am I angrier that England are out, or are you angrier that England? I'm off. Oh,
oh. It's
been a long day. Shut up. Right.
Let's go.
Shut up. Are you angrier that I'm going to wear shorts in restaurants for the next 4 years, or was I angrier at England's loss?
I think I would be angrier, you know, that you decided to wear shorts for 4 years when I told you you look stupid with it, with them, you know, and you don't want to listen to me.
Wow. Well, make sure you wear a shirt and tie now for the next time you're on TV.
Make sure when you're getting paid by other broadcasters, you don't do it here. I think it's a bit harsh on you, son.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're wearing shorts and they kind of look like trousers in a way.
Why?
Your short legs. And I never know if they're
beautiful
short.
Beautiful legs,
I never know
if they're
I never know if they're long shorts. I always try to go, are they long shorts or short longs?
People would describe my calves as Jack Grealish-esque.
Wow.
Yeah. Given the definition of them.
That's it. They're pretty hairy too.
Listen, your whole body could fit into Jack Grealish's left calf. Right? Trust me.
Oh, that is it. England are out. France are through. No. This blooming World Cup still going on. We are.
So it's not coming
home. It turns out Messi's a horrible
little
son.
It's coming home. It's coming home.
Messi's horrible and Ronaldo's finished.
Right, there you
are.
Right, you've got to pay the royalties on that now, Frank. You're done. Good.
Yeah.
We'll take that out of your wages. We will, though, be back. There's plenty to talk about looking ahead to those semi-finals.
Tuesday.
Tuesday and Wednesday, isn't it? Right. Argentina Tuesday, France on Wednesday.
Yeah.